So we are just a few days away from Hanukkah, and therefore I thought it appropriate to devote our remarks this evening to the festival of Hanukkah. Our tradition is that we normally begin with a matter of minhag or halacha, and then move into more hashkafic or thematic material. It happens to be that this year the two are quite closely related, as we will see. And we begin with the Shaila, and this question was actually dealt with by the Poskim, early Poskim, and as we'll see, even the Rishonim. The question relates to someone, as we know, every night of Hanukkah, we add another night. This person, it was the seventh night of Hanukkah, but somehow got a little bit mixed up, and he lit six lights. Subsequently, he realizes his mistake, and needless to say, he comes to add the seventh light. The question is, should he make a bracha when he lights that seventh light, the one that he forgot that he's now reinstating to complete the number of lights? Should he make a bracha? Well, the Pri Chadash, one of the early post-Shulchan Aruch Mefarshim, Poskim Pri Chadash, Rebbe Chizkia de Silva, he says, absolutely not. And his reasoning is very simple. As we know, the mitzvah itself, the basic mitzvah of Hanukkah lights, every night, is just one night. There are the famous three tiers of the mitzvah. The basic mitzvah is just one night. Even if five people live at home, the one light every night suffices for all. The Hadrin, those who wish to beautify the mitzvah, so if there's five people at home, they light five lights every night. And then the Mahadrin, Mina Mahadrin, is to add another light every night. As we've noted in the past, the first two levels are practically unknown. For as far as many people is concerned, the basic mitzvah is to add one, but that's actually not so. Indeed, the Shulchan Aruch himself only mentions the third level. He doesn't even talk about the first two. Either way, the point is, says the Pri Chadash, that anything beyond the first light is purely Mahadrin, Hidur mitzvah. You fulfilled the basic mitzvah with the first, certainly with the first six, even with the first one, which means the mitzvah's done. If you wish to add number seven because it's the seventh night, good for you. That's Hidur mitzvah, that's Mahadrin. But we never find anyone who says to make a bracha on a Hidur mitzvah. You make a bracha on a mitzvah, Sheker Dishonim b'mitzvosov. Not on a Hidur mitzvah. And therefore the Pri Chadash is quite firm on this matter that one would not make a bracha when one supplements this seventh light. However, lo and behold, no less than the Rambam, as cited by the Abu Dram, says that in a case like this, if a person forgot the seventh and he comes to add the seventh, he makes a bracha before lighting the seventh light. And of course, the question is, what lies behind this position of Rambam? Well, as we will see, the answer to this question, or to find the answer to this question, will take us to the heart of the mitzvah of Hanukkah lights, certainly as Rambam understands. We know that the time for lighting Hanukkah lights is the first half hour after either Shkia or nightfall, the first half an hour. What if a person did not light during that first half hour? Then what? Well, the Shulchan Aruch says, so if you didn't light in the first half hour, so then you light afterwards with a bracha, and ideally the first half hour, certainly, but if b'diyevet something happened, one lights later. But interestingly, the position of the Rambam is that if you miss that first half an hour, you do not light at all. It is that half an hour, and that's it. Avar zmano, bato karbono, that's it. There's no lighting after the first half an hour. And the question is, why? After all, other mitzvahs, if they're mitzvahs that apply at night, the earlier the better, but you have the whole night. Here, you miss the first half an hour, hesitate, and you are lost. So what is behind the very restrictive, we could say, opinion of Rambam, who gives you that half an hour and that's it? So the Rambam himself, interestingly, gives an introduction to Chanukah, and he introduces with the story of Chanukah, in fact. For reasons that many Mefarshim point out, the Rambam says in his introduction to Mishneh Torah, if you have my Sefer and Tanakh, you basically know everything that a Jew needs to know to live a Jewish life. Aha. Well, if you have a Tanakh, you won't find the Chanukah story. You'll find the Purim story, and therefore the Rambam doesn't mention the Purim story, but there is no Chanukah story in Tanakh, it's post-Tanakh, and therefore the Rambam gives you the story. Bimei Bayis Rish Bayis Sheni, and he goes through the whole thing, the Gezeros, and then the miracles, and then everything that happened. And then, says Rambam, Umipneze, because of this, Hitkinu, the sages instituted these 8 days of days of Simcha and Hallel, Umadlikim Neiros al Pesach Habatim. And we light lights at the entrance to the house. Now, what's very interesting is the Rambam is yet in his introductory stage. He's just giving you the background, and that led to the mitzvah. This is not yet the time to talk about details of the mitzvah. The details will come. Which wicks, which oil, so on and so forth. And yet, even in his introductory, this is the Rambam's, his blurb, one could say. In other words, this is the one paragraph that gives you the whole mitzvah. But the Rambam makes a point of saying that we light on the entrance to the house. That's a detail. Where? Or just like the where and what and with what and how many. I mean, those details will come. Why does the Rambam mention that detail already? Apparently, for the Rambam, the notion of the location of the lighting is part of the essence of the mitzvah. It's not a detail of the mitzvah. It is the mitzvah. And why? Because we're familiar with the notion of pirsumei nisa. Pirsumei nisa means to publicize a miracle. Now, the critical point of the Rambam is, because one could have understood in two ways. You could say, listen, there's a mitzvah, and if you do it, you fulfilled it. There is a value, or shall we say an element within the mitzvah called pirsumei nisa, but perhaps that's an added measure or an additional thing, but we see from the Rambam that no, this is the mitzvah. To be mefarsim, what happened there is at the heart of the mitzvah, and that's why it's at the introductory stage. When you mention the mitzvah, you already say that it's lit outside, because the be-all and end-all of Ner Chanukah is lefarsim, it's a mitzvah. If there were to be no pirsum, there would be no mitzvah. That's really what the Rambam is saying. It is an integral and essential part of the mitzvah, not an additional element. And with this in mind, as Mefarshim explain, we understand why, according to the Rambam, if you miss the first half an hour, you miss the mitzvah. Because what happens after that first half hour? That half hour after nightfall, people are still out and about a little bit, they're winding up, winding down more correctly, and so that's your window to publicize it to passers-by. After half an hour, no one's out, and parenthetically, the poskim discuss, have things changed nowadays? Some people only wake up to go out half an hour after nightfall. With the electricity and so on and so forth, and I think people are out till much, much later. That's a separate discussion. But either way, for Rambam, you see why that first half an hour, if that time is gone, the mitzvah's gone. Because pirsumei nisa is no longer available, and therefore where it's like you don't have wicks and oil. You just don't have the mitzvah anymore. Now the Shulchan Aruch, as we said, does allow you to light, to continue to light. What will we say on his behalf? What would we say to understand his position? It could be that he takes the alternative view. Maybe he sees pirsumei nisa as an additional element. Ideal, certainly, but if you didn't have pirsumei nisa, you still have the mitzvah, and that's why you can continue to light with a bracha even after that first half an hour. Or could it be that at heart the Shulchan Aruch agrees that Pirsumei Nusa is essential for the mitzvah, but he allows you to fulfill Pirsumei Nusa with those who are inside the house, and therefore they'll always be there, and that can continue even later than the first half an hour. Okay, all of this has major implications for a clause that the Gemara mentions, which is, in a time of danger, you put the menorah inside. B'shas ha-sakana, manicha al shulchano v'dayo. Put it on your table, and that's it. Because you can't light outside. Whatever constitutes danger, which the Poskim discuss. As we can appreciate, this measure for a time of danger will be understood very differently depending on how you understand the basic mitzvah. If Pirsumei Nisa is integral to the mitzvah, then this special din of Shasa Sakana is a completely new din, because there's no Pirsumei Nisa, so it's a completely new mitzvah almost, special for a time of Sakana. Whereas, according to the Shulchan Aruch, one could say that this is very simply like any b'di'eved. I mean, you always have this fallback option, even during normal times. You missed the first half an hour, you can continue to light, either without Pirsumei Nisa or for the benefit of those in the house. And Shasa Sakana is really that. It's another variation of that. It's not a new type of mitzvah. Okay, what does this have to do with our opening question? So we'll see something very interesting. As we know, the concept of Mahadrin takes the form of adding lights. The more you add lights, or the more lights that are there, the more the matter is publicized. Each light adds to that pirsum. Aha. So, if that's true, and if you understand that the essence of the mitzvah is lefarsim, then each additional light which gives more pirsum is actually an additional part of the mitzvah itself. In other words, according to the way the Rambam looks at it, it could be that when we have these three levels of lighting, basic, mahadrin, mahadrin, and mahadrin. The basic is the one light, and then with the other two levels, you add more and more lights. Those additional lights, we call them mahadrin, but they don't serve the function of hidur mitzvah merely, as if to say, the one light is your mitzvah, and these are adornments. They're not adornments. They're serving the same function and enhancing and increasing the same function of the original light itself. What you have in these three levels is actually three ways to fulfill the mitzvah of Pirsumei Nisa. With one light, with more, or with even more than that. And given that that's the case, so we can understand why, according to the Rambam, if you elect to go the route of Mahadrin Mina Mahadrin and you add a light each night, they're all an integral part of the mitzvah because they all add to the Pirsumei Nisa. And that's why the Rambam, coming back to our opening question, if you forgot that it's seventh night and you only lit six, when you come to light the seventh, it's still part of the mitzvah. That's why the Rambam says you make a bracha, because this light seven at the Prichadar says, that's Hidur mitzvah. You don't make a blessing before doing a Hidur mitzvah, but according to the Rambam, it's not Hidur mitzvah. It's the actual mitzvah. If you go the route of Mahadrin, your mitzvah for this evening is seven lights. And if you missed one out, you haven't fulfilled the mitzvah properly. And when you come to do the final light, you're now fulfilling the mitzvah itself as it should be, and therefore you make a bracha. From a certain point of view, and with this we'll conclude the more halachic side of things, as we've seen, it could be that even the Shulchan Aruch sees Pirsumei Nisa as an integral part of the mitzvah, at least for the members of the household. And some people see that this is borne out by the fact, and this I think is the generally accepted minhag, that when you add a light each night, and then you make your bracha and you light, where do you start? Which candle do you light first? The new one. Even though the new one is your Mahadrin light. So it's interesting, because why would you choose to start doing the mitzvah with the Mahadrin part and not the actual mitzvah itself. He should go back to the basic light. And in fact, the opinion of the Vilna Gaon, and presumably those who follow him in all things, is that you always start with the first light, because first do the mitzvah and then branch out to the Hidur. But according to the Shulchan Aruch, and this I think is the widespread minhag, the first one you light is the new light. But why start with a Hidur? This isn't a Hidur. This is the mitzvah. Tonight, the mitzvah is two lights, or three, or four, or five, which means that wherever you start, you will be starting with the lights of the actual mitzvah, as per the bracha that you made on the mitzvah. So these are some interesting concepts to ponder with regards to the relationship of these different levels, basic, mahadrin, mahadrin, mina mahadrin, and also the relationship of the candles to each other. Do the additional lights have the relationship of hidur to mitzvah? Or is the hidur that they're all now part of the mitzvah? And that the matter continues to be discussed amongst the Farshim, as we can imagine. But the question I think that this leads us into is, why is Pirsumei Nisa, certainly for Rambam, possibly for Shulchan Aruch, why is it such an integral part of the mitzvah? And I'll elaborate on the question a little bit by comparing Hanukkah to the sister festival of Purim, which very often they're very similar to each other. They're both Drabanan. They both have an element of Pirsumei Nisa. Yet all agree that as much as one likes to read the Megillah, I mean, reading the Megillah is like lighting the menorah. One's visual, one's audio, but it's the same value. Reading the Megillah, the more the merrier. The more the better. Pirsumei Nisa. But if you would imagine a person who he missed the shul, and it's just him, or he can't go to shul, or whatever it is, and it's just him. He reads the Megillah. What about Pirsumei Nisa? He doesn't have it. But he still has the mitzvah. In other words, when it comes to Purim, all agree that Pirsumei Nisa is somewhat separate from the actual mitzvah. So why, when it comes to Hanukkah, does the Rambam insist, no, it's all or nothing. If you don't have Pirsumei Nisa, you may as well not light. Why is Hanukkah different than Purim? And this really leads us to the heart of what Hanukkah is celebrating. And as we know, the lighting of the menorah, it represents, seemingly, first and foremost, the miracle of the lighting of the menorah in the Beis HaMikdash. And the Maharal asks, in his Sefer Ner Mitzvah on Hanukkah, asks a disarmingly simple question. Perhaps even an upsetting question. And that is, what is the purpose of this mitzvah with the oil? In other words, of the two miracles of Hanukkah, you've got the miracle on the battlefield. You need that, otherwise you lose. And to lose a battle is a terrible thing. But when you come to the Beis HaMikdash, and as the Gemara presents it and describes it, there was the Tomei oil, and they found a little bit of Tahor oil. Okay, and a miracle happened, and it lasted for 8 days. What's the purpose of that miracle? Without complaining about it, but it wasn't necessary. If that miracle hadn't happened, we wouldn't be in danger. Either we would have used Tomei oil, if necessary, for those who say that was an option, or if it's not an option, we wouldn't have used any oil, and we wouldn't have fulfilled the mitzvah of lighting the menorah, which is unfortunate, but it's like any mitzvah that you can't fulfill. We don't expect to be saved by miraculous means for all the mitzvahs that we can't fulfill. It doesn't seem to be in the same bracket as the miracle with the war. And indeed, says Maharal, the subtotal of the purpose, of the miracle of the oil was not necessary for itself. Worst case scenario, don't light the menorah. What can you do? Ones rachmana patre. If you can't do it, you can't do it. But the point is, it was imperative that the chashmonaim having just won this incredible victory, this against all odds victory, should not fall prey. Which, if a person is in that situation, it can happen. Fall prey to kochi ve'otzem yadi, to ascribe it to military prowess, bravery, so on and so forth, all of which were for sure there in abundance. But that's not where the victory comes from. The danger is when you win a war like that, so there is a temptation to ascribe all the victory to ourselves. And that would have been a terrible thing. To fail to recognize the miracle that Hashem had performed, it was imperative that the Chashmonaim realize that what they had just been through was a miracle. But how do you make them realize that? The war is done. So to that end, Hashem provided them with an overt miracle, as if to say, while they're still coming out of the war, to crown the whole occasion and the whole episode with this miracle, to let them know in no uncertain terms that they are in a time of miracles. Let them then reflect that what has just happened, once their eyes are opened, to realize that they're being treated to a miracle, that in fact it's not the only miracle that they've been treated to lately, but to make the extrapolation and the association from the miracle of the oil to the miracle with the war. And it's very interesting that this very idea is also contained in the Haftorah for Shabbos Chanukah. What is Haftorah for Shabbos Chanukah? It's from the Navi Zechariah. It's the vision of the menorah. Now, what's it got to do with Shabbos Chanukah? Well, not hard to imagine. It's got a menorah in it, so it's a perfect choice. But that, of course, does not do justice to the idea. What happened in this vision with Zechariah? So briefly, as the psukim described, their well-known psukim, it's the Haftorah also for Baal Osecha. He sees a menorah, and he sees that there's oil flowing into it from above it. V'shiva gulos arosha. And the angel wakes him up to see this. And there's a bit of a back and forth exchange. What is this? You know what it is. I don't know what it is. Until finally, the angel says to him, this is what Hashem says, lo v'chayil v'lo v'koach ki imruchi amar Hashem. That it doesn't come through hosts and through strength, human strength. It comes through the spirit of Hashem. What does that mean? Many Mefarshim see these nevuahs at the beginning of the second Beis Hamikdash, which is when Zechariah was. They pertain to the Beis Hamikdash generally, but to Hanukkah specifically. There were a lot of things that happened in the beginning of the second Beis Hamikdash that were really precursors to the Nes of Hanukkah. In fact, the original dedication of the second Beis Hamikdash was on the 24th or 5th of Kislev, as the Navi Haggai describes it. So Rabbi Yaakov Emden says that that's part of Hanukkah, is the whole of the second Beis Hamikdash. It was initially dedicated on Hanukkah and then rededicated on Hanukkah. And how then does this vision of the menorah relate to Hanukkah itself? Because just like Hanukkah, you see you have this menorah, but what's fueling it comes from above, right? The oil is being poured in from above. And Zechariah looks at this and says, but what's the meaning of this? What's the significance of this? Generally speaking, the oil that goes into a menorah, it doesn't come from above. It's kept in a jar, and you put it in when the time comes. It doesn't flow in from a higher place. And that's why Zechariah says, so why is it that in this instance, in this vision, the oil does flow into the menorah from a higher place? What's the message? And the message is that this is really what Hanukkah is about, that everything that happened in Hanukkah was flowing into it from a higher place, including the war. And that's why the final message is formulated as lo b'chayil v'lo b'koach ki im beruchi. That's what the menorah tells you. In the same way that the oil came into the menorah from higher up, so too did the victory come into the battlefield from higher up. So the menorah is a symbol of the whole Hanukkah story. And the message is also for the battlefield, lo b'chayil v'lo b'koach. And it's interesting that the Maharal is so insistent that it was imperative that the Hashmonaim realize that their victory had come through a miracle. I mean, it's obviously very important, but why is it so important? Well, I think the answer may be very simple. Why did they go to war in the first place? Greece are occupiers, benign, if you toe the line, if you follow their cultural norms, etc., as was expressed in Hellenism, and the Hashmonaim weren't prepared to do so. Why? Because to do so is basically to break ties with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. As the Medrash expresses it, Kisvu lachem al keren hashor, she'en lachem chelek belokei Yisrael. You need to sign off on your disconnect between you and Hashem. As long as you're connected to Hashem, it's not going to work between Greece and Israel. We don't see eye to eye. But if you only get rid of your connection with Hashem, so you'll make fantastic Greeks. I mean, no one makes better Greeks than the Jews, if they're prepared to do so. And the Hashmonaim were not prepared to do so, because they're not prepared to renounce their connection with Hashem. And that was the basis of the war. But not only was it the basis of the war, it was the basis of their victory in the war. In other words, what would have been a very tragic thing is to go to war over their connection with Hashem, and then to allow the victory of the war to let them lose sight of that connection. As if to say, we did it ourselves, where's Hashem? He disappeared. So what'd you go to war over? And therefore, it was vital that the very connection that was the cause of the war shouldn't go missing during the war. And that's why they need to realize, in no uncertain terms, that the victory on the battlefield was a miracle. With their input, but without divine blessing, would not have happened by any way. It's interesting that we say in Mao's Tzor, the final stanza, I mean, there's an additional one, but the final, the original, from what I understand, which is Yivanim Nikvutzu Alayim, so in the end we say, B'nei Bina, Yemei Shmona Kavar Shir Oranani. B'nei Bina, people of understanding, they instituted 8 days. B'nei Bina, Yemei Shmona. Why do we call them B'nei Bina? Where does their understanding here? I mean, they obviously they have the authority to do this, and they have the initiative to do this, but why is it a product of understanding? What does Bina mean? Bina, specifically, is when you infer one thing from another. Bina, lahavin davar mitov davar. Bina relates to the word bona, in other words, you build. You have something, and from there you build. Outwards, in terms of your understanding. If you infer A from B, you've built, and that's the faculty of Bina. So, the Pri Chodesh, again, has a famous view with regards to the 8 days of Hanukkah. As we know, probably the most famous question regarding Hanukkah, and possibly one of the most famous questions in the history of Judaism, is from the Beis Yosef. Why is Hanukkah 8 days? The miracle was of the oil was 7 days, because there was enough oil for 1 day. So if they live for 8 days, you have 7 days worth of miracles. So why is Hanukkah 8 days? It is impossible to count the number of answers that have been given to this question over the years and generations and centuries. But if we pair back to the classic answer, shall we say, the Pri Chodesh, who responds to this, discusses it very extensively, says very simply, it's true. The miracle with the oil was only 7 days, and it's only 7 of the 8 days of Hanukkah that actually you celebrate the miracle of the oil. The first day is the miracle of the war. So it's actually the 8 days of Hanukkah are a composite, 1 plus 7. The first day is for the war, and the 7 days are for the 7 miracle days of the oil. And in fact, he demonstrates this to be so, because if they finish the battle on the 25th, then when they lit the menorah, it's the night before the 26th. So those 8 days were actually for the 26th, and then the following 8 days. So why for us is Hanukkah the night of the 25th? The night of the 25th, there was the evening of going into battle. They hadn't lit the menorah yet. But you see from here that the 25th is for the battle. The 7 days from the 26th and onwards are the 7 days of the miracle of the oil. So it's interesting that coming back to this, the Nusach of Maoz Tzur, 8 days of Hanukkah is a product of Bina. It's a product of inferring one thing from another. Namely, inferring the miracle of the war from the miracle of the oil. If they hadn't made that inference, if they hadn't built that understanding, then Hanukkah would actually be 7 days, or might not even be at all, but it would be no more than 7 days, because there were only 7 days of miracle with the oil. But because they were B'nai Bina, they took the lesson that the miracle with the oil was there for, namely, see this and go back, turn backwards and understand that day one on the battlefield was also a miracle. That's Bina. Now you have 8 days of miracles, and that's why B'nai Bina, Yemei Shmona, Kavushir or Ananim. As B'nai Bina, Hanukkah is 8 days, otherwise would be 7 days. So these are all very, very central themes with regards to the miracles, the relationship between them, and the purpose of both of them. But either way, perhaps now we can understand, to answer the question that we started this section with, why would Pirsumei Nisa be much more at the heart of Hanukkah, more than Purim, and more than other mitzvahs, which is Pirsumei Nisa? Perhaps one may say that since the miracle that we're commemorating on Hanukkah itself was there in order to publicize a miracle. In other words, according to the Maharal, the miracle with the oil only was provided in order to illuminate the fact that the war was a miracle. And therefore, every time we celebrate a miracle, we try and replicate it a little bit. Zecher l'nes. That was with oil, we use oil. It was a menorah, we do a menorah. That miracle was to publicize a miracle, and therefore it's much more embedded in the heart of the mitzvah as a zecher l'nes to be mefarsim l'nes. Because the nes itself was there to be mefarsim l'nes. That's why Pirsumei Nisa is so much part and parcel of Hanukkah. And if we move from here, perhaps to look a little deeper into the whole matter of Pirsumei Nisa. What is the source of Pirsumei Nisa? Where does it come from? Obviously, it sounds good, and we embrace it. But where does the notion come from, Pirsumei Nisa? So interestingly, one of the earliest sources to discuss this question, Pirsumei Nisa, is someone called Rabbi Daniel HaBavli. Now, he was a contemporary of the Rambam's son. In fact, they had correspondence a lot about the Rambam. And his work is called Ma'aseh Nisim. And Rabbi Daniel HaBavli says that the source for the mitzvah of Pirsumei Nisa, to publicize a miracle, comes from the Torah, where it says, V'nikdashti besoch b'nei Yisrael. V'nikdashti besoch b'nei Yisrael means to sanctify Hashem's name in the midst of b'nei Yisrael. Now, sanctifying Hashem's name can take many forms, as we know. We talk about the concept of a Kiddush Hashem. But a major branch of this mitzvah of Kiddush Hashem, of sanctifying Hashem's name, besoch b'nei Yisrael, in public, is to publicize the miracles that he provides. That's part of Kiddush Hashem, to sanctify Hashem's name, to let people know about the miracles that he's provided. And what's very interesting is, according to this, and again, this is the earliest source in the Rishonim to provide a source for Pirsumei Nisa, according to Rav Daniel HaBavli, the basic notion of Pirsumei Nisa is actually Minat Torah. It's actually D'oraisa. Because Kiddush Hashem is a mitzvah D'oraisa. Which means, says Rav Daniel HaBavli, that as much as we say that Hanukkah is D'rabbanan, of course it's D'rabbanan, as is Purim, of course they're D'rabbanan. True, they're D'rabbanan because who's to say that the way you should publicize is specifically through lighting menorah, with all of its details, or specifically through reading the Megillah, with all of its details. So in other words, the particular way in which to publicize the miracle, that's certainly D'rabbanan. But on a D'oraisa level, you've got to do something. The basic notion of publicizing a miracle, if not only to announce Hashem did a miracle for us, is D'oraisa. So it's a very interesting mitzvah. According to Rav Daniel HaBavli, Chanukah and Purim, but Chanukah is under discussion at the moment, the core of Chanukah is Doraisa. To publicize the miracle that Hashem did, that's Doraisa. To do it specifically through menorah and Chanukah lights, that's Derabbanan. That may well be. Very interesting. So the first source, according to Rav Daniel HaBavli, as we said, B'nikdashti, B'soch, B'nei Yisrael. The only other source that I can see in the Torah for the concept of Pirsumi Nisa is Korban Todah, the Thanksgiving offering, which also has an element of Pirsumi Nisa. Why do I say that? Because as we know, the trademarks of the Korban Todah is that, and of course it comes from when Hashem performs a great kindness for someone, whatever he did, he was in trouble, he was saved, etc. So the Korban is accompanied by 40 loaves of bread. And actually the time to eat the korban is condensed from 2 days to 1 day. More food, less time, equals guests, says this foreigner. That's the Torah's way of saying get people to eat, because there's an isser to leave korban food over time. So it's basically you, 40 loaves of bread, and a clock. And if by you know, the next day, they're still there, so you did something wrong. You can eat them yourself, if you want. I personally think if one individual managed alone to eat 40 loaves of bread, he's probably required to bring another korban todah just for that experience. But either way, the point is, get people together. But why? To tell them about what happened. To tell them about what Hashem did for you. That's why they'll all eat the korban together with you. As the Netziv directs our attention to Halal. L'cho esbach zebach todah uveshem Hashem ekra. Are these two stages. The first is bringing the korban, esbach zebach todah. But then you have this sudas hodah uveshem Hashem ekra to all of your guests who were there to help you eat the korban todah. And therefore, through the Sforno and Netziv, we understand that Korban Todah is also a source in the Torah for the concept of being Mefarsein, a nes, some outstanding kindness that Hashem did. Interestingly, there is, according to the Medrash, or more correctly, there is a Medrash which will give us a specific source for Pirsumi Nisa in Chanukah. How does it begin? There's a pasuk in Shir HaShirim. This is an often quoted Medrash. There's a pasuk in Shir HaShirim, Hadudaim nos nireach. The dudaim, the flowers, they've given off their, whatever dudaim are, those jasmine or whatever they are, they've given off their fragrance. The al pesachenu kol megadim, and there are precious fruits by our entrances. That's a pasuk in Shir HaShirim. Okay. Says the Medrash, these two parts of the pasuk relate to two different episodes. Hadudaim nos nireach, the flowers, the dudaim. Well, who's associated with dudaim? It's Reuven. And this is Reuven who saved Yosef, or tried to save Yosef, by Yishma Reuven, by Yatzilehu Miyadam. This week's parsha. The apesachenu kol megadim, and what are the precious fruits by our entrances? Ze ner Chanukah al Pesach habayis. So the Medrash has connected somehow Reuven saving or trying to save Yosef and the mitzvah of Chanukah. What's one thing got to do with the other? My inyan Reuven, it's all Chanukah. It's also interesting that Reuven is associated with Reach. Hadudaim nos Reach. That's the first thing. It's a fragrance. Whereas at the entrance to our entrances are Megadim, which is actual fruits. What's behind that? So there's a very wonderful explanation of this Medrash, which is found in a sefer called Apirion. Apirion is a sefer written by Rav Shlomo Ganzfried, who of course is famous as the author of the Shulchan Aruch, but he wrote other works also. He wrote on Masechtas, and he has a sefer on the Chumash called Apirion. Apirion Asa Shlomo, Shlomo Ganzfried. And the Rav Shlomo Ganzfried explains that here the Medrash is providing us with the source for Pirsumi Nisa, and it will become specifically Pirsumi Nisa of Chanukah. What's the source? The source is in the Torah, but where? It's in the Torah because Hashem was mefarsim Reuven's gesture. Here's Reuven, put himself out for Yosef and tried to save him. And the pasuk tells you about it. It tells you what he did. It tells you why he did it. Leman hatziloso. In the end, it didn't work out. But the pasuk says that was his intention. And you should know about it. If he did, if he extended himself to do some wonderful deed, you should know about it. Says the Apirion, that's the source in the Torah for Pirsumei Nisa. Why? Because you learn from Hashem. There is a mitzvah to learn from Hashem's ways. As we know, Mahu Chanun, Yubi Chanun, Mahu Rachum, Yud Rachum. So just like he's mefarsim things that we did, so then Afata be mefarsim things that he did. So it's an amazing source for Pirsumei Nisa, because it's actually part of V'halachta B'drachav, right, to follow in Hashem's ways. Let people know about good things, just like Hashem, that he let them know about the good things Reuven did, and other people did. So let people know about the good things that he did for you. And in fact, what is the difference between, even a further chiddush, Reuven's act, if we could borrow the expression, it didn't bear fruit. Right? He tried to save Yosef. It didn't work. He thought he'd bring it back to Yaakov. By the time he got back to the pit, Yosef wasn't there anymore. Hayeled enenu, vani ana niba. So all, quote unquote, all you have, all Reuben has to his credit, is good intentions. You know what that is? That's reach. That's an aroma. It's not substantial. Nothing came of it. It wasn't realized, not practically. What is reach? When you smell something, that means you have a sense that it's nearby and will arrive. Unless it never does. Right? And therefore, hadudaim nasnu reach. Here's Reuven. And the most you can say about his gesture is that it was stopped at the reach stage. He had the best of intentions, nothing came of it. And still the Torah publicizes it. Well then, now we have a kal vachomer. If the Torah is prepared to publicize what is only reach for Reuven, good intentions, which never really were materialized, so when Hashem does things for us which do materialize, not just good intentions, but actually good actions, the fruits themselves, so then certainly one should be mefarsim. Ba'al pesachenu kol megadim. And in fact, I think, again, we're in the nuances here, but I think there is a deeper point. Because, or a deeper element here. As we said, what was the basis of the war between Yavan and Yisrael? Are you connected with Hashem or disconnected? If you're connected, we are enemies. If you're disconnected, we are friends. Disconnect, and we'll be best of friends. And Chashmonaim says, we are not disconnecting. We're holding on to our connection with Hashem, and we'll fight for it. So therefore, what Hanukkah celebrates is basically the connection with Hashem. That's why the miracle is expressed through the menorah. The menorah, as the Gemara says, Eidus Shashchina Sherubi Yisrael. It's the testimony that the divine presence resides among Israel. The Ner Maravi, there was an ongoing miracle in the menorah. It's like a pilot level miracle of Hanukkah, because the oil always lasted longer than usual. It should have lasted the night, lasted the next day as well. Eidus Shashchina Sherubi Yisrael. That's what the war is all about. That's what the celebration is all about. And what's fascinating is the connection with Hashem over which we went to war and which we celebrate in Hanukkah is actually strengthened through Hanukkah. Why? Because the connection with Hashem is strengthened when we emulate Him. Because the more we emulate Him, the more we become similar to Him, and the closer we come to Him. That's why that concept is called Ledovkabo. To cleave to Hashem is to cleave to His ways. So if His ways are to be mefarsim good things that people did, and we then emulate that by being mefarsim what He did, so in that act of publicizing, we are emulating, and that's actually drawing closer to Him through that emulation, strengthening the connection that the Hanukkah celebration is all about. So there are there are wheels within wheels here in terms of the synergy of how Pirsumei Nisa is both the celebration of the connection and a promotion of a higher connection and strengthening that connection. And I think there's room for a final point. Because when we talk about, and if we can maybe step back and speak about Pirsumei Nisa in a general sense, there's room for one or two final comments. What is the concept of Pirsumei Nisa? Lefarsem, to publicize. I think the simplest way to describe publicity or the role of publicizing is to let people know. Let as many people know as possible. Lehodia. And if we publicize, the message is spread as far as possible. So I'd like to ask what I hope is not a chutzpahdik question. And that is, if you live in a good Jewish neighborhood, everyone knows. And in fact, you know that everyone knows, because everyone's lighting menorah. So it's good. But it's all known. Whoever doesn't know doesn't live in your neighborhood. So what if you're in a place where everyone knows? What do we say about Pirsumei Nisa? You know, there's many hidurim when it comes to Hanukkah, this type of oil, that, and they're all good. Kulam ahuvim, kulam berurim. I've never heard anyone suggest that one of the hidurim ways of enhancing the mitzvah of Hanukkah is go out and find someone who's never heard of Hanukkah before so that you can tell them about it and thereby fulfill the mitzvah, Pirsumei Nisa, to publicize it. There's no such thing. Even if you assume that whoever sees the menorah knows about it, it's okay. And moreover, Hanukkah is 8 days long. So if this is a regular passerby, you've got to assume he'll get it by day two or three. I mean, if it takes 8 days, it could be a lost case anyway. But the mitzvah of Pirsumei Nisa continues throughout all 8 days. And there is another issue, I think, with regards to Pirsumei Nisa. Again, comparing Hanukkah with Megillah. The mitzvah of Pirsumei Nisa in Purim is to tell the story of the miracle. Literally. To read the Megillah. So whoever hears the Megillah, if they understand what they're hearing, the miracle has now been publicized. Because they just heard the whole story. They literally just heard the whole Megillah. But now compare and contrast that with Hanukkah lights. What's the mitzvah? You light a light. So now, not only are you unlikely to find a person who doesn't know the story, but moreover, if you do find such a person, he still won't know the story. He can be watching your lights for 8 nights. He won't know. If anyone is able to infer the story of Hanukkah from looking at a menorah, that person, I think, is doing just fine. They either have Ruach HaKodesh or whatever it is. You see a menorah, and you get to thinking, presumably Greek oppression all those years ago, and then the war, and then if you can work that all out from the lights, well, good for you. But most people can't. Which means that it's very interesting, there's such emphasis on Pirsumei Nisa, but it couldn't work for someone who actually needs it. And all of this, I think, is leading us to perhaps understand Pirsumei Nisa a little differently. In no way negating the notion that let people know about it and inform people in no way that. But it seems that Pirsumei Nisa, publicizing the miracle, is not just for the benefit of people who don't know about the Hanukkah story. It is also, and possibly more so, for the benefit of people who do know the Hanukkah story. Why? So what then is being served here? They know the story, so why are you publicizing it? Because the act of pirsum, the act of publicly displaying something, has an effect on the consciousness and the awareness and the appreciation of even of people who know. I mean, Lahavdil, for what it's worth, a lot of Pirsum is not just it's not just for people that don't know, it's for people that do know. But it's a different relationship with it because it's public. It's proud. It's on display for all to see. It's a way of expressing it in a way that gives a kind of a heightened sensitivity to it for people that do know it, because we know lots of things, but we know them on many levels. And this brings it to a very, very celebratory level. No one necessarily learns anything new about the story of Hanukkah from the menorah, but everybody feels different on Hanukkah. You see all those menorahs. They teach you an element of the story you didn't know, a detail, an episode, none of that. But everything that Hanukkah is looking to promote comes to the fore. And everyone is elevated by it. That's Pirsumei Nisan. It's for people that know. So the irony is that by projecting all of this light outwards, it actually embeds the appreciation of Hanukkah inwards within the people. There everyone's uplifted and everyone's inspired as they should be. And for that matter, and this is the Nesivos Shalom says, the Slonim Rebbe. Once we've taken it this far, and we realize that Pirsumei Nisan, it's not just to let people know that don't know, but also for onlookers who do know, it's not even only for them, it's also for the person who lights the menorah. The act of publicizing has an effect on the person who does the publicizing himself. Your appreciation of the Hanukkah story, when you light the menorah for all to see, it then has an effect on you that it wouldn't otherwise. And I think this is a very wonderful way of taking the whole concept of Pirsumei Nisan from its much more utilitarian understanding, which might never be realized, because as we said, you find a person who doesn't know, but to understand how it affects all of us, those who light and those who see, and everyone knows, we all know, but now it's here, and now you see it, it's available, it's on display. Apesachenu kol megadim. One could even say that the goal of all of this light, which is spread outwards, is that light should go inwards to the person and stay lit. Even when the Hanukkah lights go out, should stay lit within the Jewish people, having had those 8 days of proud display, and should keep them illuminated for the entire year ahead. I wish you a Hanukkah Sameach, a Liftecha Hanukkah. As we said, we'll meet again in Mitzvah Hashem in 2 weeks' time. All the best. Bye.